grain of rice, a grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
We may be coming to the fag end of the GAA season, but that doesn't mean that the great stories end. My name is Tony Lean, and when I came to Cork and the Examiner first in 1989, Larry Tompkins' pub was only around the corner from the office on Academy Street. He was only a couple of years older than me, but he had achieved so much with Cork, and I also knew of his exploits at Gaelic Park in New York. Anyone who had kicked a ball in the Bronx had heard of Tompkins' heroic afternoon there in the colours of Donegal. We grew friendly. I was always wary, I guess, of his bark, mind you, but pally enough that we'd go off training together on pitches around Cork and Toker and even down in Ballygarvan. He used to look at me at the end of those sessions, the sweat would be dripping off me, and he'd say, you know, if you're keeping up with me, then I'm finished. Larry Tompkins' standards were a lot higher than most of us. This guy made his senior Kildare debut at 16. He played an All-Ireland final, well, part of it anyway, with a torn cruciate. He carried teams on his back, or certainly as near as keeps that out of the realm of hyperbole. But as one of the true icons of Gaelic football, I've always felt he was some way undervalued, I think. I put it this way, if there was a GAA transfer market, I'd break the bank to sign him. Recently, he was inducted into the GAA's Hall of Fame, so, you know, maybe he's not undervalued after all. But his story is remarkable and poignant and controversial. We spent 2 hours chatting last week, and I felt I was only scratching the surface of the Larry Tompkins story. Here's part one. We're going to talk about modern day football, Larry, and we're going to go back. But just thinking, you're 56 years on this planet now. What would you say is the greatest thing Larry Tompkins has achieved in his 56 years?
I suppose, growing up, I suppose, in the environment I was in, small little place, very rural. I suppose just to achieve, to think that you're going to be the best and to try and get somewhere near it. Actually, it's been every road that somebody takes like that, it's rocky, it's bumpy, it's every direction, but you have to be able to deal with every aspect. But I grew up like with, I suppose like a lot of people that time didn't my family didn't have an awful lot. We had no transport, we had no electricity, we had no running water for a long time. All we had was a football and a farmer's field, and listening to, going up to the neighbour's house and listening to the matches on the radio, the old radio, and just thinking someday that maybe rather than me listening to it, I could be in that radio. So, yeah, it's...
You were the youngest of seven.
I was youngest of seven, yeah. I had four older brothers, and two sisters, yeah. So, somebody said I got spoiled, but look, listen, when the potatoes were thrown out on the table, you had to dig in.
Yeah. So I often wonder, you know, when we talk about kids and offspring, and you even, you know, when you look at your own now and you talk about, okay, the youngest one is the one who learns the most because they learn from the mistakes of the previous ones. I mean, looking back, do you think in some ways being the youngest wasn't a bad thing?
Well, I suppose it has its advantages, and then it can have other things as well. Like, but I suppose it helped me, yeah. I think it did. I think it was playing up in the farmer's field again, my brothers in particular, they were all good players. And they would have no mercy on you. So, look, it toughened me up. It spelled a kind of a direction in my life, like that. I think when I nurtured going through life, I think it helped me a lot.
I would describe you, and take this as a compliment as being as hard as concrete on the field. I think in a generation after you, Declan O'Sullivan, actually, of Kerry, reminded me a small bit of you, not just because you both played at 11, but because you could both mix it physically, football-wise. You had all the skills, yet you weren't afraid, and there was nothing, there was no such thing as a 40-60 or a 50-50 to you. I'm just saying, that's not something, Lara, that can be coached, I don't think.
No, I'd agree. I think it's, as I said, it's a lot to do with how much you want something and your desire and your, you know, I had a massive family, like I had a massive parents and mother and father, like they were great people and you know, you respected everything that they done. And I think when you come up in that environment, I think that you are a better person in every sense of the way. Of course, everybody has their failings, but I think I'm very respectful to people like to have been involved with teams, over teams. You know, a lot of people nowadays might overlook that. You know, things like even simple, basic things of even coaching the team today, like and being involved. You know, players don't even pick up a cone or a ball or a bib afterwards and bring it in. Mm. Like, that was, we probably didn't have the bibs, we didn't have a lot of footballs, but we always helped out, like.
Yeah, and you had respect.
Yeah, yeah, like, and that's a massive thing. And I even said to my young fella nowadays, like, and he's playing there with Bishopstown, and he's only 12, but, you know, I always say to him after every training session, you know, I always say to the coach, listen, thanks very much, you know. Mm. But, you know, those things go a long way, like.
I was talking to you about this coming down the stairs. I can imagine you coaching teams now, and you were with Mitchelstown, I know, this year. And given your work ethic and given your background and your inherent honesty as a footballer, some of the modern generation must drive you batty.
Yeah, you'd be just trying to probably gauge your own experience and try to, you know, at times I just wonder, are they listening? Are they just in a different world? Like, we all know, like, that everything revolves, and certainly, you know, Ireland has revolved the same way as every other country, and we have the modern technology of the phones and the PlayStations and all of those things like that, that just weren't there in our time. And you're able to, if you have a problem or you need to know something about an injury or about some other things in life, you go to Google and you try to find the problem. But does it really find the problem, like, because the problem, like, in a lot of these cases is communication, like. And, like, I think that the modern society are lacking kind of maybe communicating with people properly. And I think it's a bit of a headache going forward, I think, for the generation. I think, how do you do it? How do you cope with it? I don't know, simple things in life that people don't even know how to do, like. But, you know, it is a worry, like, and I think with anything in life, I think you have to be able to communicate and talk to people.
How do you roll with your own young fella?
Actually, look, listen.
He's 12 now.
He's 12, yeah. He's doing all sports. He's enjoying it. He's playing hurling, football with Bishopstown. They're great up there. They're great at the underage. He's involved. He started off a number of years ago. He went up to he goes to St. Joseph's School in the Maryland there, and he was up to fooling around, I suppose, initially doing tennis up in Sunday as well, and he's taken off in that. He's on the Munster squad in tennis. So, look, I encourage him to the best that I can. I'm there with him as and sometimes I get too involved. But I suppose that can be from maybe my old ways of frustration at times when I feel that he should be doing better. But look, listen, he's enjoying it, and hopefully he can move on in the right direction.
Yeah. Throwing it right back, Larry, because, you know, there's a generation that doesn't know the Larry Tompkins story, and I'm sure there's a generation who believe he should still be in Kildare, and obviously most of those people are probably living in Kildare. Tell me about the story behind your time in New York and how you left Ireland a Kildare footballer and you basically came back, if not a Cork footballer, a Castlehaven footballer.
I suppose it's a long-winded story, Tony. It's Kildare were were a prominent, no, still a very prominent team. Like we played Division One National League. I'd say I commanded the Kildare senior team in 79. I was 16. Like, hard to believe, people wouldn't, they say I'd be kind of dreaming, but 1979, yeah, I was born in 63. 79, I was got a call up with the Kildare seniors, purely on the basis, I think, at the time that we had a lot of players in Kildare that were probably good enough but wouldn't commit to it, including my own brother, who was a serious player, probably one of the best Kildare midfielders.
What was his name?
Joe, yeah. But I suppose that there was a lot of discontent with it within the county board and the way the county teams were ran, and it was just complete total. It was just like a juggling machine, really. You didn't know what you were going to get from week to week. And we'd end up going training with maybe 12 and 13 and 14 players training. Like, it was hard to believe. Like, and Kildare playing in Division One in the National League, getting attendances at Newbridge was hard to believe. In the health and safety, I laughed at last year when they were saying there were 8,000 or 9,000 people at the Mayo Kildare game. That time in National League games, we were getting 13,000, 14,000 people.
To Newbridge?
Yeah, to Newbridge, yeah. And I suppose when I got the call up, I was absolutely thrilled. I was on the minor team. That year, I had lost the minor final. I was at the 1980, lost the minor final to Meade. And the following week, I was drafted into the under-21 team, playing a Leinster final against Dublin. And I have that significant thing of losing two Leinster finals in 1 week, both at minor and under-21 level, and to Meade and Dublin beaters. But I suppose I got the call up in 79, and it was a kind of a freak thing of a call up, because there was the ESB, or there was some major thing on strike, that, and the army were called in, and we had a few players that were playing on the Kildare team, including a guy called Tommy Shaw, who was the free taker. And Tommy couldn't travel because he was involved with the army. So Eamon Donoghue, who was the manager of Kildare, he called me and asked me would I come on to the, not be on the team, but just come as a to be part of the panel. So I said I was delighted, I was thrilled. And it was even going back to my memories of thinking that maybe I'm going to get on that radio, that, or inside that radio that I used to listen to when I was a young fella. So my first game was 1979. That time you played three games before Christmas, playing in Roscommon in Dr. Hyde Park, and playing against the great Roscommon team. That was a hell of a team. Yeah. And
they were in the All-Ireland final that
year. Yeah, I played on a guy called Jerry Connellan, who was a very influential player, and they had a hell of a lot of great players. And just we got a hammer on the same day. I kicked 4 points, kicked 3 from play.
At 16?
16, yeah. And I was happy with my performance. I was coming back and I was on the radio, and actually the radio used to be our way of hearing things, because we had no TVs at home or no radios, nothing. So it was just to hear the radio, and Jimmy McGee, the Lord of Mercy, and he's saying that a record was, I remember him saying a record was created today as the youngest player ever to play at senior inter-county level. So look, listen, it was a boost. It was great. It was just something that I dreamed about. And I just gave Kildare everything I had, and for, I suppose, that's from 79, playing senior level, played 5 years under 21, played 3 years minor.
5 years under 21?
Yeah, yeah. Eventually won a Leinster final in 1983, I suppose one of my bad injuries I got over the years, it started from then, was we played in an intermediate county final. Again, Castle Dermot, the club
Eadstone.
Eadstone,
yeah, of course.
And got really taken out of it beforehand, or just after half time, and kind of just got up and kind of took a stagger. Nobody knew at that time, like, what was, you know, you can imagine, like,
concussion.
So played on, didn't even realize, scored 110. We hammered him out the gate in the final. And
you remember that, though?
Well, like, I remember it afterwards, but it's funny, I don't remember anything about the game, like, yeah. And the presentation was made, and I was just, I don't know how I got from there into the dressing room, but I collapsed inside the dressing room, and I was in an ambulance, came through into Newbridge, and carted off, and I was in a coma for over 2 days.
Are you serious? Yeah. So what age were you then, man?
That was 1983. That's 20. And I was playing the football in my life, and clear looking forward to an All Ireland semi final against Derry, which was a massive thing, because I had never been in that. We had never got that far. But ended up, it was a hard time for my parents, naturally enough, and for my family. It was in a kind of a touch and go situation. Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, I suppose being in a coma for that length of time, and I suppose they didn't know whether it was going to come out of it. They don't know the length. When you go into a coma, you just don't know. You just don't know.
And you don't know how you're going to come out, if you are going to come out.
Yeah, and I suppose it was. They were contemplating a lot of operations, but thanks be to God, I came out of it. It was over 2 days.
And did you, can you remember? Did a guy just blindside you, or did you get a box? Or
no, I was just basically taken out with an elbow.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. He kind of just ran from one side of the field to the other to get me. That was it. So.
And did the medics say to you at the time, "You listen to me. You're lucky to be alive. Pack up your football," or was that not the way?
Well, that was the way it was afterwards, yeah. It was a lot of hard talk, and I was out of hospital in about a week and a half. It was 2 weeks later, it was the under-21 semi-final, so naturally I missed that. I travelled with the team. There was a great guy over the team that time, Tony Keogh. He's dead now since, died a young man. He was a fanatic about Kildare football, but it was a trying time, and Derry beat us by 2 points in the semi-final.
So, worse.
Yeah, it was a game that I'm not saying it would have made that much of a difference, but look, listen, it was there for the taking, even on the day that they played. But I'm sure Cork beat Derry then in the final. It's amazing. But it was a tricky time as regards, like, my future was in doubt as regards would I ever even talk out. Initially, it was a case of it looked like it was over.
At 20.
Yeah, it looked like it was over. I had a hairline fracture of the skull and the temple bone, yeah. So it gave me a lot of problems I was told, like, that certainly within 12 months I couldn't do anything. After 4 or 5 months, I was attending Jerry McEntee, which is amazing. Like, Jerry was in the Mater Hospital, and Jerry couldn't be, he sent me to all the top people and specialists, and sort of my angle in, and Jerry knew where it was coming from, because I had known Jerry a long time, like playing again Meade, like even in the, when I came on the Clare team first from 79-80, Meade were beginning to kind of surge, like, with that team, and they were young bodies. Jerry was a great bit of stuff, Joe Cancels, Mick Lyons, they were all good mates of mine and good solid friends. He gave me the best possible treatment and advice, and I suppose within time, then I got a bit more confident, got back to work, started getting a bit more calm. I went out training. Actually, I used to feel a bit of lightness in the head and headaches and stuff like that. When they were talking that maybe if I did get back to play, like, I'd have to kind of wear this kind of protection over the head, like, it'd be kind of like Rory Best. So this was kind of mentioned, but I kind of took the advice of Jerry McEntee, nice enough, and he kind of guided me back, kind of, and I was back playing within 8 or 9 months.
Right. So that was 83. When did you actually leave for America, New York, and why?
I left in 85. Why? Because I was unemployed.
You were a carpenter,
I was a carpenter, I worked for Kevin McGough in Kildare for about a year and a half, and then went to Dublin and worked for Martin O'Shea Builders, and it was amazing, because O'Shea was a Kerry man and Martin was an Offaly man, and the Ladies' Cup now is Brendan Martin. That's him.
Really?
Yeah, and he was the guy that basically got the ladies' football up and running to the extent it is to this day, yeah. And he was naturally very influential in trying to, I suppose, get the ladies' football team going in certain areas, in certain places, and put a good bit of money behind it and backed it. I done a bit of work in Croke Park over the years, and we had a lot of the contracts that were going out. Brendan was getting a lot of them there. worked nearly all of it in Dublin, and worked with, got to know and work with Pádraig Dunne, who was, became very friendly with Pádraig to one another, and with Offaly in 82. And I knew all that Offaly team so well, like, and was very friendly with Matt Connor, who I rated seriously high as a player. Like.
Massive.
And the morning of his accident, like, amazing, like, Richie Connor, who was his brother, rang me and informed me of the accident, and none of us realised at the time, like, how the extent of it was. Went to see him on the next day, actually. Stephen's a day, amazing, in a hospital called Stephen's Hospital, which is not there any longer now, across from the train station, Euston Station. And sure, listen, Matt was as happy as Larry, actually, excuse the expression. He didn't think there was anything major, but within 24 hours, he was moved to Dunleary, and the news broke then that he would never play football again and paralysed from the waist down. So, listen, it was a massive blow for not alone for Offaly and for Walsh Island, his club, but massive blow for the whole of Leinster, because he was a serious player, like, and people that looked up to him, like,
massive blow for football, Larry.
Massive blow for football, yeah. Like, he was just a massive legend, like. And so, look, you know, when you hear Kerry people and they talk about players, like, and you listen to them because they know their stuff when they talk about football. And you hear, like, the statements they make about Matt Connor, like, it's just, that will tell you. But, you know, again, like, you're just going back in a generation, you just love that young people would have seen him to this day, like, and to see just the ability the man had, like.
Yeah. He glided.
Yeah.
He was just pure.
Yeah, and I used to see him play with Walsh Island, and we used to have fierce fun because that time scoring was a big thing, like, and used to have on the Dublin papers the highest scores in each of the national leagues and throughout the championship, and it was a massive thing, and was myself and Matt Connor were kind of all the time battling one another out, like, to try and see who would get the highest scoring. But yeah, it was a massive blow at the time. But
sorry, you were saying about you were out of work. That's how you.
Yeah, I was out of work, and I had been working a good bit in Dublin, all in Dublin, and I'd been out of work for about 6 weeks in 85. And I just went into Dublin one day, just walking about, and ran into a person called Mick Wright, who played with Offaly. Mick was working. Mick was a journalist and ran the Hogan Sand magazines, if you remember at the time. And amazing, because the Hogan Stand magazine, I think it came out nearly every week. It was an electric kind of a magazine, but Jesus, how he was able to produce it, like, every week, he was just unbelievable. And it was a real hit, because people were really going for it big time at the time. But he was doing well there, and I just got talking to him. I just met him on O'Connell Bridge, and he said that he had been out in America, he had, in the summer, and that he played football with Donegal. And he just said, "Jeez," he said, "would you be interested in going out there?" Or just off. I said, "Jeez," I said, "I don't know." And I kind of left it at that. And 4 days later, I got a call from a guy in America that was over the Donegal team, Donald Gallagher, who came as one of my great friends over the years then. And he asked me, would I come out for a weekend, that weekend? So it happened very quick. So little did I know, I was on a plane heading for America. Never in America before in my life. Hardly ever in a plane in my life. And went on the Friday and played a game again, Sligo, I think, over in New York on the weekend. So I had kind of, not that I had planned to emigrate or anything like that at that time, but I think I played very well in that game, and I kicked 1-9 or something, and naturally they were very anxious to have me. So they said, "Listen, you know, what can we do to get you out here?" And look, I said, "I'll go home and I'll see what I do." And I was very anxious to go out myself, because I just felt like I'd just been there for a few days. I just enjoyed it, and I just felt there was massive opportunities there.
And especially with the trade you had.
Particularly with my trade as well. So I said, "Listen, and do nothing at home." And we were all tradesmen at home, and there was only one of us working. Like, it was just mad.
The 80s was a bad time. Right?
Yeah. and like, it was a time that, not like the recession that's just gone. It was, the 80s had no work, but they had no big borrowings. Like, they just had, people had no work. Like, that was just the way it was, and we're just sitting at home, just looking out the window. Like, that was it. It wasn't a nice place in a rural area. Like, just to be, I was all there just sitting, and we might go play a bit of football. We couldn't do that every hour of the day. So, just people needed to just have a bit of work. So Narcy, when I came from there, it was in my head like that. I just needed to go back there. And I decided, I was on the All-Star trip that year, and the All-Stars ran in May, and there was a Matt Connor charity match for Matt, and in Tullamore, the rest of Ireland in the All-Stars, I played in that. And then the following week, that particular year, Kildare had made me captain of Kildare. And I had informed Eamon Donoghue of my intentions that after the All-Star trip, I was staying in New York. So Narcy was something that he didn't want to hear, but he understood like I had been.
Big blow now for your captain to come up to you and say, by the way, I'm off.
Yeah, like he had kind of known it for maybe 5 or 6 weeks before that. I said I had told him I had been kind of gone out to America or gone out, and that I was maybe going to spend the summer there. That was the way I was kind of. And I said, look, Eamon. And Eamon was 100% guy. Like Eamon just said, look, I said, will you come back if you need to come back? And I said, Eamon, I'll do anything. If you tell me to come back and you want me for a game, I'll give you 100%. And I said that. So that's the way it was kind of left. And I went on the All-Star trip, and I ended up then not coming back from the All-Star trip. And when you get your ticket going over, and this is where the input of the tickets, we'll go on to in a minute. When you go to an All-Star trip, you give a ticket, a return ticket, which you have to when you're going into America anyway, because otherwise you wouldn't get through immigration. I had the return ticket still valid from my All-Star trip, still there, which I wasn't coming back from New York. So when the call, I was in work. I had started in 608 in the Carpenters Union in America, and getting on very well with Donegal over there and really enjoying it. And Eamon Donoghue rang me. They had got over Wicklow. They had played Wicklow in the championship, and they were playing Meath then. And they had a bye in the first round, played Wicklow, and then they were playing Meath in the semi-final. And he asked me would I come home for it. So I just said, look, I said to him, look, I said, I told you I'll give you 100%. I'll be back. But I said, I have to have a return ticket to come back, because I will use my return ticket. I can go into the travel agents, which I had checked, and I'd pay my $50 or $60 to just to change the date, come back on the original All-Star ticket, return ticket. But I said, to get back to New York then again, I need a return ticket again. And I said, will you just verify that? Knowing the way the county board is,
yeah,
there was always that temptation in my head like that this wasn't going to be plain sailing. So Eamon rang me a few times and told me everything was fine. He had talked to the county board. Pat Dunne, who was the chairman, and Seamus Aldridge was secretary. He told me that everything was in place and everything was organised. So I had said it before I left to Donal Gallagher Rover, that was over the Donegal team. I told him the problems. He had known the problems, like we had talked nasty a number of weeks before that about Kildare and different things. And I just told him like that the way the whole county was kind of being ran at the time and wasn't great. And that's... I was glad to be over in New York the way it was going on, you know. So it wasn't a case that I never said that I would never play with him again or anything like that. That wasn't the issue. I said that was just the way it was. But I had said, maybe when I go over here now, I said, do you know what? They mightn't even have the ticket ready. I just kind of passed a comment like that to him. So, of course, he was fairly tuned in. Without me being even known, he had put a reservation in the computer for me just in case that it was a mess up. But I didn't notice. And I played the game against Meade. I played okay, didn't play great. It wasn't my best games by any manner of means. Meade beat it by, I think, 2 or 3 points. I went back into the dressing room after the game, and Eamon came over to me. He was absolutely furious and said, like, that the boys have told me that there's no ticket there for you.
To go back to New York.
Yeah. And Eamon was gutted because, actually, he was the guy that was...
He was a fall guy.
Yeah. So I just said, look, do you know what? It didn't surprise me to the degree of surprisement, but I was furious, just got into my gear. They said they'd see me down in the hotel and explained to me. It was the Beachmount Hotel in Navan, never forget. And my brother was at the game, my eldest brother, Tommy. And I told Tommy coming back in the, I didn't even travel back in the bus. I came out, and all the players, John Crofton, Paddy Donoghue, all the stalwarts in Kildare, they were playing the teams the same that day. Shea Fahey played in that game, and they were all new the story. Like, so I arrived back in the hotel and I was having no meal, whatever. I just wanted to get out of there. Mm. So Narcy went down to see them, and the minor team had played the Rin having their meal with the minor team, Pat Dunning and Seamus Aldridge, and they never even lifted their head, both of them. And I went down to see them, and they just said, look, and I never forget their words, what they said, and I'd never ever missed the train session, Tony. And they said, look, we couldn't get any ticket for you to go back to New York. It was late booking or something like that. And, seeing that we won't be needing you anymore anyway, why should we pay for the ticket?
They actually said that.
Yeah, that's exactly what they said. And they never even looked at me when they said it. Donnie didn't even take his face off the table, and Aldridge was talking as he was eating. And I just said, fucking hell, I said, is there the greatest show of whatever?
Mm.
I said, it's no wonder the Kildare football is the way it is.
And that's me done with Kildare football. Did you more or less think there and then?
I said to them, look, I'm badly stuck. I said, how am I going to get back to them? You know? And they made me make an agreement with them that if they wrote me a cheque and they must have booked this or tried to book this late, that was a business ticket, which was €740 or £740 at the time. And they wrote out a cheque for £740 and gave it to me under the agreement that I would pay them back. Right? So I took the cheque in and I suppose a lot of things went on in my head.
Mm.
But came out and the players, the senior player, forget, the senior players were coming in the door or they're in, someone were in the bar there, as you would be after a match and before they went in for the meal. And John Crofton went like a lunatic and mad, and a number of the other players, and I believe there was a fairly big schmozzle as regards inside in the meal area when but I was gone at this stage. I had gone and with my brother and all that. So went home that night, and I told my father I said I'd never play with Kildare again. Mm. I said, I don't know what's going to happen in New York or how long I'm going to be there for, but I left under those kind of circumstances. I arrived at Dublin Airport the next morning to get my ticket, had the check. Again, Tommy drove me to the airport and had my ticket or the check. And went up to the counter, as you did that time, for Aer Lingus was flying out with, and asked, was there a reservation there for my name? And they said it was. And looked and said, yeah, that's going to cost you £740. And I said, yeah, fine, yeah. And I was paying the cheque just as she was taking it. And my name came up again. They said, did someone book another ticket for you? There's another. But I said, where's that? And said, this has been booked from New York. There's a reservation there put through for you.
And paid for.
It wasn't paid for. They had what was called a down payment on it if I took it or something.
I see, yeah.
Right? So that was 400 and something, which was the normal price of a ticket. Okay, it was called an Apex ticket. And I gave them the cheque. I said, can I pay with that cheque and the balance? And the balance of the cheque then had to go back. A draft had to be written back to the person that signed the cheque, which was the Kildare County Board. So Tommy took the remainder of the cheque and I headed off and he headed off and he went back to Nace. He knew where Seamus Aldridge lived and basically knocked at his door and he wasn't too polite what he said, but he just threw the cheque back into him and said that you'll never see my brother ever playing with Kildare again.
Mm.
So that's kind of how it transpired.
That was a 7-hour flight to New York. I would say you did a lot of thinking on.
It was kind of something that didn't surprise me.
Mm.
Because my brother, as I said, was a hell of a player and he wouldn't play with them because he just thought they were just a disorganised crowd. They were just, and you see, they had this kind of just felt like the Pat Dunne, he was a great player himself. Like Pat Dunne won, when Rainbow Cups were really strong, Pat Dunne won Rainbow Cup with Leinster in hurling and football. Like he would have been deemed to be one of the great players that played with Kildare, but he kind of had a what would you call it, a jealousy over his shoulder, like that I was kind of taking his limelight.
Mm.
And I just felt that was the case. You know, I would never, I could never be like that, because I never felt like that ever in my life. I'd only be very much encouraging everybody to do the best they could, and if somebody was better than me, fair enough. You know what I mean? I tried to get to that level.
You must always look back fondly on your time in New York, not just as a footballer, but just as a great, great town to live in.
Ah, yeah, like look, people can go wrong there or go right, but like, look, it was a massive, it was a massive decade, that early 80s, and as you know, even the late 80s, like it was, like I was going to Gaelic Park of a Sunday, like, and five games there, and 8,000-10,000 people there. Mm. Like, it's hard to believe, like, it was just rocking, like, it was just, and you would be just in the bar. John Kerry O'Donnell had the lease in the bar there, and John was he was an old guy at the time, and great guy, like, and some people got on with him. He was moody out as hell, but like, he knew his stuff, like.
I remember Lara playing a game there in Gaelic Park one Sunday. I think I was playing with Leitrim, and I bent down on the sideline to tie me boot at one stage, and one of the mentors from the other team came up the line and gave me a clatter across the back of the head. It was fairly rough. You had to mind, you would have been well able to mind yourself, but you'd have been a mark, you'd have been a target for a bit of abuse, I'd say.
Well, do you know what, it was a good education for me too, because you know, you always examine yourself in relation to, you know, nobody's perfect there, or nobody is perfect no matter what to do in life. But you're always learning, like, and I just felt like that I just needed to toughen up a bit more, like, and just kind of be able to grind out things on my own bat, like, and like.
Did you think you needed to toughen up at that? What age were you at this stage? Maybe 24.
Yeah, well, like, no, well, like, that was 85. Like, that would, I would have been 23. Two, was that, yeah, 22, 23? Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I'd gone through a lot, like, with Kildare. Like, I'd gone through, apart from the ticket situation, just as regards the playing aspects of things, I was always kind of the person that had to kind of dig them out of the woods, like, in Kildare, like, and I was always, you know, hoping that I could score 9 or 10 points every game, like, this kind of
big ask for a 22-year-old, like.
Yeah, and even before, like, even when I was 16, 17, like, you know, like, my second game was against Armagh in Newbridge, like, packed stadium, like, 12,000-13,000 people there, and you know, I missed a penalty that day, like, you know, I was asked to kick a penalty at that age, like, and I missed it, and still to this day, like, it still haunts me a bit, like, that, you know, and that was a great day, because my brother played full forward, Joe played that day as well, so, look, there was a lot of things kind of came to me mountain, but still, you're always examining yourself how you can be better, like, and I just thought, like, that when I went to New York, like, I think I became tougher and harder mentally, and I wouldn't give up. No, not that I give up easy, but it made me more stronger as regards not giving up on anything, like. And you know, those games were tough out there. Yeah, they were tough, and like, the quality, there was some massive quality players, like, out there at that time, like,
because they were the weekend pass players, weren't they? There was a lot of,
like, that, yeah, you had people like myself. Like, that time, you know, you had a guy called from Louder, Aidan Wiseman, came out, like myself. You had another guy, Willie Lowe from Westmead. Like, these were serious players, like, in Leinster. Like, another guy, Mick Casey from Longford. Like, these were guys like that Kevin Madden and Carla, like, that I knew, like, through the reins of playing in Leinster. Like, they were serious players, like, and, like, you were playing against teams, like, that could have had 8 or 9 senior inter-county players playing with them.
Yeah.
And like, every team was, it wasn't that they were kind of built with weekend players at that time. It was a good home-based package of players that were out there. And like, Donegal were made up with guys like that had come off of maybe success at under 21 level with their counties, and then emigrating the same time as I was when they were that age. And great players, hungry for the game. Like Eugene McNulty, again, from down, like, a hell of a player. Like Una McIntyre, Donegal, like, played wing back, won an under 21 with Donegal. Anthony Malai's brothers, like Lanty Malai and Connie Malai. Great players, like Martin Connolly, that played with Castlehaven, the Collinses, like Kevin Madden. Like, these would be guys that people wouldn't hear those names, but, like, jeez, they were all serious players. Like,
Did you actually live in the Bronx as well?
Yeah, I lived on 231st Street on Godwin Terrace, yeah. I remember the area well, like, and we used to go down to the local pub there was called the Celtic House, and that time you see, and that's how I got to, we never stayed away from the games at home, like, because that time there used to be a video come in on the flight of a Monday.
And the papers used to come in on the Monday evening.
Yeah, and you go down then to the local pub of a Monday night or a Monday evening, and there'd be a big gathering, and they'd show the matches, and you'd see the games then of from whether it was the Munster Championship or Leinster Championship, whatever. It was just, so it was a nice place to go over Monday night and look at them, you know.
I suppose what we'd say next is the Castlehaven connection. I mean, explain briefly, how did you start to even look back to Ireland? You know, how did it come that you would want to actually even give up on New York? Because I know for 20 years after coming home, I still had a longing for New York. I don't know whether you were the same.
Yeah, without a doubt. How did it happen? I suppose 85 we won the New York Championship. And I had grown up with, there was four lads from Castlehaven on the team, or, well, the two Collinses were kind of on and off the team, Anthony and Vincey. And a guy, Martin O'Mahony, was on the Donegal team, very good player, kind of forward, and then Martin Connolly. So amazing, like, for a small little club, like, you had four players, like, playing on the Donegal team. And, so look, we were out after games, we were going great, we were talking about home. You know, when the Wolf Tones would play, everyone was going to the Wolf Tones because you missed Ireland so much. When any
the
band,
Pogues came on the jukebox.
Yeah, and when the bands had come over to New York, so everybody went to it because you felt being at home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was just a natural reaction. And these guys started talking about Castlehaven. And jeez, like, I hadn't a clue. If Castlehaven was in Bangladesh, I wouldn't have known where it was. They just told me it was kind of near. They do slate me when they say the first. I kind of got some inkling where it was. They said it was near Skibbereen, so naturally the rivalry with Skibbereen and Castlehaven was huge. But I hadn't a clue where it was based in Cork, and I wouldn't have been. I would have come down here over the years playing National League matches in Cork with Kildare, and like, so you get off the train, you get a bus to the ground. So I wouldn't see. I never seen Cork City. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Twice. And Wayne Castlehaven.
Yeah, and like, it was. And but like, it was just there, you know, when somebody, Tony, did gets up and speaks and talks about something, or over a team, and they're talking and they're trying to motivate you, and they're speaking, or you listen to somebody speaking, so like, you know, after 5 or 10 minutes, like, really, is it from the heart? Like, is it, does it mean life or death? Is it something that you die for? Like, it's the same like talking within a team or within players or whatever. But they used to be talking about Castlehaven. It was like their life depended on it. Like, it was just, I was kind of saying to myself, "Jesus, like, these guys are fanatic." Like, you know, Jesus, they were.
This is Connolly and the lads.
Yeah, like, and the Collinses. Like, and the Collinses came from a massive background of, you know, seven brothers, and you know, every one of them, like, were all great, good players. Like.
And just to bring that right up to date for people who don't know, obviously that's the same family as Mark Collins, the current Cork footballer.
That's it. Francis now, that I played with, that would have been Mark's father. Like, but
did they start saying to you, you know, when the Wolf Tones were playing in the background and there was a few points, we're thinking of going home, would you come with us?
So it started as a joke, like, because they knew my differences with Kildare. And it wasn't a case that they've seen in opening, I don't think. That was never the case. But it was just a bit of fun saying, look, geez, we're going to go back some year. And we have to win a county with Castlehaven. We won't die happy unless we win a county with Castlehaven. And every time you met them, it was Castlehaven. And then they were telling me then, I said, well, who's playing with them? And, you know, you'd be asking who, saying Niall Callan. Sure, I never met Niall. I used to see him go down for Monday night. And then matches, I'm saying to you, inside in the Celtic House, and you'd see John Cleary and Niall playing, that were on the Cork team. Like, John came on in 83, I think, played again Kerry in the Munster final. And like, and then I knew their brother, like, John's brother, then Dennis had been on the under 21 team. So like, I was kind of, you'd be thinking there, you'd be going down the subway then to work, and geez, you'd be saying, four lads over there. Geez, if I did go back, myself, five. Then I knew Mike Maguire had been out on one weekend. Just, he was sub goalie with Cork and could play out the field as well. Then you have Niall Callan, 7, John Cleary, 8, Dennis, 9. Jesus Christ, I said, if the other 6 are not too bad. Yeah. I said,
there's a shape of a team here.
I said, Jesus, who knows? And so, like, that was kind of going on in my head a bit. And I said, Jesus Christ. Like, and then I'd say to him, I said, Jesus, I said, how is he not able to win a county? You know? I said, Jesus, you seem to have good players. And they were saying, we're missing someone like you. And they were all saying, Jesus, come back with us, we'll have a great crack. And we'll only go back for the summer, so we'll be back in America. So, look, we won the New York Champs beginning in 86, and it was 86 was a huge year because we had, actually, we won in 85, and Donegal hadn't won the New York Champs. This was like All-Ireland Finals, like, Donegal hadn't won the New York Champs for over 20 years, like. And we had a lot of great people involved, and sure, after the match, sure, it was as good as any All-Ireland Final, winning the first one. The drink was going high in the dressing room, and people were just, it was phenomenal, like, it was brilliant. And I suppose the best thing with Donegal was like that we had a real home base team there that was living there. Mm. You know, we had the Parry Duns that was living there. Pat O'Toole from Wicklow was there. We had these guys like that, as I said, that people wouldn't know their names, but they played serious, they were serious footballers, like. And we just came together great as a team. And following year in 86, we played Cavan in the final, and Cavan had 13 inter-county players, like. Like, a lot of the Kerry team was out now playing with them. And I had been out for a good part of the summer. But we absolutely wiped them off the field. Like, we bet them 4-14 to 1-6. And it was probably one of the greatest displays ever inside in Gaelic Park. Like. And we just said, we were talking then, and they were still talking about Castlehaven and the lads. And then Donal Gallagher said, look, this team is really exceptional. We should plan to go over to Ireland and have a trip in 87.
The Donegal team.
Yeah. Mm. We just felt we were so good like that. We just wanted to pit ourselves against the best. And we said, if we went back in May, the county teams were really prime for games coming up to championship. And we'd try and play three or four games again. Naturally, Donegal was going to be one and Cork was going to be another, because naturally we had a lot of representatives from Cork. And it was organised then just before Christmas that the team was going to go away. Of course, they had funds and stuff like that, wasn't a problem. They had big hitters there involved in the team, and everybody was really looking forward. So we organised a game against Cork, we organised a game against Mayo, we organised a game against Laois. And Donegal was our last game.
Over the course of a fortnight?
It was nearly three weeks trip.
Okay.
That's what we're looking at. So then the lads probably got then saying, look, this is an opportunity for us to maybe stay over there for the summer and play with Castlehaven. And that's when they started kind of saying, look, Jesus Christ, can't you stay? Can't you just, Jesus, we sort of listen to you. What have you to lose? I said, yes, no. I was kind of looking. So, look, they had been on to me and on to me and on to me. And one, I still say to this day, that year, 87 or 86, 87, even though I was the best football I ever played in my life. Like, I was just...
What did you score of that 4-14 that day, can you remember? Probably about 2-10.
I don't think. I got one goal. I think I scored about 1-13 or 1-14 or something. You know.
Not bad.
Not bad, yeah. Well, it was funny, the final before it against Sligo, that was a real hard game. Score ended up, it was a draw the first game, 1-9 to 12 points. I kicked 1-8, and Tim Lai's brother kicked the other point. And Pat Spillane was the only player we brought over. And I was gassed because Mick Wright called to me the night before the final, and Pat was out for the weekend. And Mick and Pat, seemingly over the years, didn't get on, or Mick didn't get on with him anyway. So Mick knocked on my door anyway and said, Larry, by no fucking circumstance you're to pass him a ball tomorrow. So an amazing New York final. This is hard to believe now. This is the gospel to it. 5 minutes before half time, a row broke out with the two of them, and the two of them went fucking near to fight. Like,
on the same team?
On the same team. Fucking hard to believe. Like. And we playing again a team like they were favourites to beat us on the day, like, and they were a hell of a team, Sligo. And we had to fucking get right at half time. And do you know what? The match ended in a draw. There was ructions afterwards. Spillane stayed for the week because we were playing the replay the following week. And he ended up then the best of buddies the following week. So a lot of good stories. But 87 was...
Go back to Castlehaven.
Yeah.
What actually made the decision?
I tell you what made the decision, though. I was playing the football of my life. I was in the best shape of my life. And people were just saying to me, jeez, it's a crying shame you don't go back and see what you can do. And I said, well, fuck it, I can't go back to Galway. And it wasn't a case of going back to Cork. And even though Billy Morgan had been in America in 85, 86, he went home late 86, and I would have played again. Billy played with Leitrim. And he was working in Rosie O'Grady's, the pub down below in Manhattan. Mm. And I used to pop in that time and just even knew him to talk to and stuff like that. So 87, I was training in January 87 on my own, which I'd done a lot over there. I used to go to a gym and I'd go for long runs and up and down. There was a big hill beside that gym there, Jack Nenane's gym it was. And it was snowing the same night in the gym room. That time your communication at home to your parents was, it wasn't by phones, it was by letters. Mm-hmm. And my mother used to always ask, and she's like, when are you coming back? You know, this was always the end of the letter, like. And I trained that end of January and I was coming home. And it was parched with the thirst, and I ran into this kind of store. Like, it'd be like a central store now. And the snow was pelting down. And I looked out and I said, jeez, I said, you know what? If I don't go now, I'll never go. And I ran back. I forgot about the drink. And I ran back up to the apartment. And I was staying on the fourth floor of this place. And Martin Connolly stayed literally across the corridor from me. He was, I think I was in 4F and he was in 4D. And I knocked on his door and the snow was dripping down off me. And I said to Martin, I said, have you got that transfer form? I'll sign it.
Wow.
And that's how it happened. And I just, it was just one of those moments I said, listen, I'll go over.
It was the snow that done it.
Well, I don't know what, but like they were just, I think they were just so passionate.
Yeah.
I like the word just. They were just...
And that would have been big with you, Larry.
It would have been big, yeah. It would have been big because I just kind of know as people, when you go through life and from me, from where I kind of came from and how I grew up and the whole lot, you kind of get to know how much it means to somebody about something. And, you know, I've come across great people, like, and great people have helped me along the way. But, like, these were another brace of people, like, they were just... What would you say, in a different league, like in relation to their thinking and their passion for it?
And was there any problem in terms of transfer from Eadstown or?
Oh, sure. That was another story.
Oh, no.
This wasn't plain sailing. It was, I got a call. I signed the transfer in 1987, end of January. And my transfer wouldn't go through because the Clare County Board said, we need letters from his employer, we need this, we need that, we need to see that this guy is at home, so they wouldn't sign anything. And I suppose it had to, Frank Murphy got his teeth in it, and initially the Collins had said to me outside, like, that you would have to go for an inter-county transfer because, of course, Frank, the man he was, kind of knew my background and said, look, we get this guy into county transfer rather than what we call a club transfer. Like, he knew that he had gone through the process of knowing the implications that I probably left. Mm-hmm. And there was actually, there was articles maybe written about it and over the years and the way I was treated. So, and Frank was no doll. Like, I always say, like, he knew everything about me. Like, he knew how many times I played Rabbit Cup. He knew when my first Rabbit Cup match was. And I commanded the Rabbit Cup team was 17, like. Mm. Like, Greg Blaney commanded the same team. That time, Rabbit Cup was serious, like. I was in Breffni Park, 30,000 people had, like.
Ulster, Leinster.
Yeah, like, and Greg was 18 years of age and I was 17. And, but Frank would have known all this, and he knew, like, that, look.
There's an opportunity here.
Yeah. But it wasn't in my head, like.
Yeah.
I was never in my head to go back and play with Cork. It was never in my head that I was going to play with Cork when I come home. It was Castlehaven, like. Mm-hmm. But I said, look, if it's an inter-county transfer and it's going to get it sorted quicker, go ahead with it. Because I knew I wasn't going to be playing with Kildare again, so it didn't make any difference to me.
Mm-hmm.
But it never was mentioned that I was going to be ever playing with Cork, like. It was Castlehaven.
But it all happened... very quickly, because you're mentioning the year 1987 there, and I'm picturing you in the 1987 Munster final, am I right?
Yep.
After Mikey had just danced through for that impossible goal, that literally he got the ball down up the other end and you were kicking the free to level it. So there must have been a very short time frame before you actually, between coming home and making your debut for Cork.
Well, it's funny, it's amazing how fate, and like, it's amazing how things happen in life. I came home in May with the touring team from Donegal to play these games. And we played against Cork, we beat them, we played against Mayo, we beat them, we beat Laois, and we went along, we played Donegal on this trip in the last game, and we were a bit spun out, and they were probably, no disrespect to Donegal, but they were probably the worst of the four, and we drew with them. But like, just to Donegal alone, like our team over there, it just showed like how good that team was. Like, you know, we had played really good quality teams, and we had beaten them all really. But my transfer hadn't still gone through. I came back from the lads when the trip was finished up in Ballybuffet, to all the fellas dispersing the next day and going their different direction or going back to New York, or some of them staying. And like with the four lads in Castlehaven, like naturally they were staying, right? And my transfer wasn't through.
So you were in limbo?
Yeah. So they were saying, I was getting a message from the Collinses. Francis was dealing with a lot of it, Mark's father now. He was saying, oh, it'll be sorted next week. It's all. But I knew there was a problem coming from Kildare. So I had to get letters from the employer, who was Christy Collins, was employing me at the time. I did get a letter from a priest down below that I was living in Union Hall. And I had to get a letter from my club that they were sanctioning the transfer from
Eadstown,
yeah.
They weren't of the same mind as the Kildare County Board,
no,
obviously.
They were very supportive, like, never a problem there. But in order to get the thing over the line, they had to sign the dotted line.
And you had Frank in your corner.
Yeah, but it wasn't as easy as that. Any time this thing was coming up, they were missing.
Who were missing?
Pat Dunne and Seamus Aldridge, the guys that were the chairman and secretary of the Kildare County Board. They needed a signature from them. Even though at the time, Seamus Aldridge was a influential referee and refereed a couple of controversy matches over the years, but he still wouldn't obey the situation as regards what was coming down the line. And every time that he was supposed to sign it, there was a problem or he was away. And this is how it was getting put back. And every time I was living down in Union Hall, and I used to be going down to the old telephone box in Union Hall, and I'd be ringing my mother, and I'd be saying to her, this fucking place, I said, it's a ghost town. I said, I'm fucking going back to America. And you know, I was like,
from the Bronx to Union Hall.
Yeah. I was saying, and I can't even play football. I said, fucking getting out of here. Right? I said, this is fucking. And every week, they'd be saying to me, oh. And then I used to go down, and that's why she became a great woman, like my own mother, Mike McGuire's mother, Nora. I used to go down to Castletowns and Christy Collins at the pub there at that time, and I might go in there, and after I was drinking, I'd go in and have a chat there. And Nora was living beside in the terrace house there. And Nora said, come on in. Next minute, before I'd even realise it, she'd have the dinner up for me. You know, one of the old stock.
Good people.
And she had great stories to talk, and she like, look, she was one of the most knowledgeable people ever talked about football. She knew every player in Cork, but all over the country nearly.
But you could train with Castlehaven Lair at the time, I presume.
I could train. I was training.
Can you remember what your first training session? Could you remember your first training session?
Castlehaven.
Because it was a big move.
Yeah, it was a big move. And my first training was very, very easy. Like I wouldn't have thought. No, it was at no deal.
Yeah, you know, you were in some shape.
I didn't sweat too much in anyway, but I suppose their training was a little bit low key as regards what I expected. You know, and what I mean by that, like, I thought it'd be tougher. You know, that was my first impressions.
And did you articulate that thought and concern?
I didn't want to overpush myself, like, as regards, like, you know, like, people knew where I kind of stood, and I suppose the lads that came over were kind of wanting me to get me more involved, to be kind of involved in the training, because they knew I'd push them hard, you know. But we had a good fellow in Castlehaven there that was, Parry Buck was over the team, and he was, you know, he was a tough enough hard master, like, but we just needed to get our base. But still, it was a bit demoralising for me. I was travelling up a little bit up to Kildare and seeing my folks, and and back down. So it might have been at one or two training sessions with the Haven, but I didn't know whether my transfer was ever going to go through. And this was going on since, you would say, January. Like, why did they need, you know, this kind of length of time? So every week I was going back to America. Like, I was on the verge. It was like a toss of a coin. I was heading back. And it kind of, June then came in and still not transferred. And Castlehaven were playing championship match. And I think they were playing St. Nick's someone, and they were expected to beat them, but they didn't beat them easy, you know, to beat them. And they were through to the quarterfinals of the championship. And so here was me looking at this, couldn't play. And Frank Murphy rang me one day and said, look, listen, there's a few complications. And he was saying, he was kind of used the language about these fellas in Clare, where these was like, I said, you haven't fucking dealt with these fuckers. I said, these guys will do anything. They'll fucking put everything in front of you to stop you getting a transfer through for me. Of course, Frank listened to this, and of course, he said, probably there's no one who's going to beat me here in this. So he kind of more or less reassured me that it'll be sorted. This is coming out early. Billy Morgan rang me probably a day or two afterwards. I hadn't talked to Billy since my days in New York. And since he left in late 86, and then he was appointed manager of Cork in that year, 87, Billy rang me and asked me, could he meet me? So I said, fine, grand. So we ended up meeting at Skibbereen Golf Course. And I met him, and he asked me, would I come up to train with Cork? That was his way. He said, we'll see how it goes, see how you like. And I said, Billy, I'm home here to fucking play with Castlehaven. I said, that's all my angle. I said, I don't want to mess you up. I know the way it is with inter-county scene. I said, I'll stay away from it. And that's how we left, that I would stay away from. I wasn't going to go up to train with him. And at that time, actually, I knew Shea Fahey was involved with Cork and had been training with Cork. But I hadn't met Shea since my days of playing in Kildare. So I ended up down in Castlehaven. It was a Friday night. This is the 12th of June, never forget it. 12th of June of a Friday night. Frank Murphy rings me and said to me, could I get on the train the next morning with the Cork team? They were playing Dublin in a challenge match in Parnell Park. He said, bring your gear. And I said, Frank, I said, yes, what am I bringing my gear for? He said, your transfer will be through in the morning. We just need you to bring your gear just to make that kind of, if anyone is kind of be around, because there might be a few people about and around. He said, we'll have this sorted in the morning. So whatever way he had designed to catch Seamus Aldridge, Cahanima, within, and there was representatives from Crow Park, even had to go with Frank to hound him down to get it signed. But they had kind of more or less put a cop's car after him to make sure that he was going
an
to
an APB
be.
On yeah, out yeah, Mr. Yeah. Aldridge.
Yeah, yeah. So I arrived at the train station that morning, and Narchi was with I drove up myself, actually. I had a car there from a guy there from Castlehaven, Paddy Hegarty. And Narchi, Niall, I knew Niall and John Cleary and the lads, Mike McGuire, they were, and Mick Burns at Ardamersham, he was on the train as well. So I knew them lads, but I didn't know anyone else apart from Shea Fahey, and I was looking forward to meeting Shea because I hadn't seen him for nearly 3 years, you know. Mm. So got on the train, you know, met Shea. You know what I mean? It was very unusual for both of us, like.
Don't imagine. Yeah. What I'm thinking is, could you imagine if that happened now? It'd be up on Twitter, seen, spotted Larry Tompkins at Kent Station with his gear bag. You wouldn't have got to Dublin and it would have been headline news. But then?
So then, like, it was, I just went up on the train and just, I suppose, I arrived in Parnell Park and just, so like, listen, I didn't think I was going to be fucking talking out or anything to that extent. I was sitting in on the benches there in the dressing room and the lads were talking out and I was just sitting there, and Frank Murphy came whizzing in the door, a smile on his face as long as the day is long, I never forget. And I always say with the handshake of really meaning it, you know, as I said, Dermot Early, the Lord of Mercy, when you die from us coming, There's one thing that man had. He had a shake hands that was the most welcome shake hands you ever have in your life. Like
Frank.
That. Well, he was in comparison to like a Dermot Early.
Yes, I know what you're saying.
And Frank just came in, like, and he just came over and he shook my hand and he says, "Welcome to Cork." He said, "We're delighted to have you." He said, "Will you do me? Will you tug out today?" Out of the blue, I tugged out, and next minute Billy named me on the fucking team. And my first guy I marked was a guy called Eamon Heary.
I remember.
That played with Dublin.
Wing back, wasn't
wing
he?
Wing back, and yeah. We played centre back. I played centre forward that day. He played centre back. And I came back down, and of course, look, I played. I didn't say I played great. I played reasonable, okay.
But so you actually played with Cork before you played with Castlehaven?
Yeah, this is amazing. And I got transferred the day of my birthday, 13th of June. At 12 o'clock, I often asked Frank afterwards, when did he sign the dotted line? He said, when fucking, it was literally 12 o'clock that day when the transfer form was
1987.
Which means 13th of June.
I was just about to say, they were getting you at 24 years of age. Yeah, like, talk about coming into your prime.
Yeah, well, I was...
In the football transfer market, that would be a seriously big fee. You know, that...
Well, look...
Did it make huge headlines, Larry, at the time? Can you remember?
I'd made headlines, but I don't think it made... You know what I mean? It was... I suppose I had been out of the scene for a few years, and I suppose if it had to happen, like maybe when I was in the scene and still playing, maybe the headlines might have been a bit different. But there was a lot of headlines made at the time when I left Kildare, when I went to New York, and got massive support from all the Kildare fellas, like... And that continued. It was amazing, like,
even after you signed
and
you obviously though must have made a very quick impression on Billy.
Well, I suppose like that he would have known a lot of people in New York, and he knew like that. See, when I went to New York, like, Frank McGuigan was the king of Gaelic Park, like, but like, as Frank said to me, like, afterwards, he said like that, you know, you destroyed my reputation, you know. But Frank was a great guy, like, great player, like, but, of course, like, Billy knew, like, the impact I was making in New York, and he was probably no fool. Plus the fact, like, that, you know, Frank knew, like, deep down, like, was probably, hopefully, a big difference that I could make, like. Yeah. And I suppose Frank was a major influence, like, in relation to all this happening, you know what I mean? And the probably the support he kind of gave me, like.
And Frank, you know? And Billy, Larry, would both have been aware that golden era of Kerry was coming to an end. I mean, they'd won the three in a row in 86, but they were running on fumes at that stage. And did you feel even there, like, you had looked at Castlehaven and saw what you could be like on paper? Now that you were on that train journey, literally, with Cork, were you looking at that and saying, you know what, we could push this?
Look... And I always keep saying it, like, even to this day, like, and I would have been totally against this kind of, looking at this 5-year plan, like, in relation to what was kind of, because, like, I came to Cork, and, like, I was in awe of Cork, like, as regards, like, their ability, their always the team, like, they had massive potential. I know to slate and say, like, that Michael Dwyer's would always say, like, they're the second best team in Ireland, like, you know, when Kerry were beating them. And
you might have meant it, by the way.
And he fucking meant it, like. You know what I mean? Like Cork produce, and always have produced serious players, like, and I've watched myself over it from the 73 team, even before that, like, I've seen them playing, like, and like, it's amazing, like, I used to be going to down to my aunt down in Galway, and her husband, now they're both of them are dead now since, her husband, Tom Kelly, was involved with the Galway County Board for nearly 40 years, like, and I used to be going down to them every year on holiday and staying there a few weeks, and I used to be ending up, and one of the years was 73, and I used to go to the training sessions, and I was kicking the balls back for the Galway team, like, you know, the likes of Tommy Joe Gilmore and John Tobin, Jimmy Duggan, Liam Salmon. Like, they were serious men, like. And, like, it was just, I suppose, coming to Cork, like, it just was an era of excitement. And I suppose pitting myself against the best and maybe hoping that I'd get the chance maybe that I would play again the best. And I always felt like that Kerry were the team to pitch yourself again where you were as a footballer, like. And every time I listened to that radio, and that old radio back the years, like, sure, like, Kerry were in that radio all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, there were household names, like, and there were, you know, Jack O'Shea, John O'Keefe, Sean Welch, like Mike Sheehy, you know what I mean, Bomber, you know what I mean, there were names like that you were just in awe of, like,
you know. Yeah, but do you know what, watching you on the field after 97 against Kerry and other, you never gave the sense, or if you held them, you know, in that amount of awe, you never showed it on the field.
Well, oh, well, like, you believe in yourself, don't you? You know, that's the most important thing. I knew I could be better than anyone else. I knew it wasn't a cockiness, it wasn't a, but I knew I had worked hard. I knew I could compete against these fellas. I knew as a young fella I'd compete in Kerry. I marked Tim Kennelly when I was 17, 18 years of age, like.
In the National League.
I scored 1-9 against him in a tie in Kildare, like, when I was only 17, like.
And lived to tell the tale.
And lived to tell the tale, yeah. But, like, what was a massive input in relation to my career was getting into a gym, developing my physical strength. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, Dermot Early was a big help in relation to I wanted to go. Gyms were very scarce at that time, going back to 79, 80, like. And I played against Kerry in the National League game in that 79, and I was only bordering on 17 years of age. And I was down in Tralee, and this is, I know we've skipped back a few years now from what we were talking, but I remember, and the other messenger was Frank King was the chairman of Kerry, and we got off the train and we went down to Tralee and we were playing the National League game, and I was only 17 years of age, and we went upstairs, and I forget, we had after the game, Kerry were after hammering us, and I was after playing in Jim Dean and Paddy O'Shea in that game, and I played reasonably well against him, but I was very young. But here was I looking at, I was inside my head was, how do I get to where you are? You know? But I couldn't ask the question.
Yeah.
You know? And Eamon Donoghue was over our team, and Ogie came over, because Ogie and Eamon Donoghue played with UCD in the Sigerson, and they knew each other, and Eamon introduced them to me, Ogie. And straight away, before I ever said, "Jesus, great to meet you," I said, "Jesus, could you tell me what type of training are you doing, or what would you advise?" And he looked at Jesus, he said, "You're very young." He said, "You know what?" He said, "Maybe getting into a gym and doing a bit of long running would help your strength." Jeez, the next day, anyway, I contacted Dermot Early. He was over in the Curragh camp. And I asked him about a gym. What was the story? And it wasn't a gym to be seen. You know what I mean? You're talking 79. Like, people think now, oh yeah, go down the road there, there's a gym. You know what I mean? It's totally different. Like, it wasn't a gym to be fucking got, like. But there was a gym in the Curragh camp. But Dermot couldn't let me use it because it was against the rules and regulations, unless you were within the army regime. So he said, "Leave it with me, whatever." Jeez, that's it. 2 or 3 weeks later, Dermot rang my home place and said, "You were talking about a gym." He said, "There's two fellas that are here in the Curragh camp. They're opening up a gym in Naas, and it's opening up in the next 2 or 3 weeks. It's beside the townhouse hotel as you're coming in the Newbridge Road." She says, "I didn't wait a second. Every day I was looking to see, coming back from work now. I used to be working in Kilcullen on the buildings." And just here I see a nose up in the door, and I went in, and I just didn't meet the two fellas. They're only sitting up all day, and these guys were in the army, like. And I told them, and he said, "Look, listen, we'll be open in 3 weeks' time." When they opened, I lived there. And they trained me and showed me everything.
What age were you now at this stage?
I was 17.
Okay.
Yeah. And when I played on Tim Kennelly, I was probably 18. Would have touched the 18. And I played against Tim in the National League. It was the opening up. We used to play all our games in Newbridge, but that day we played it in a tie because they were opening up their pitch. And I marked him, and I scored 1-8 off him. And I was able to kind of match him a little bit more for physicality. And not that I could fucking overall could match him for physicality, but
you could hold your own.
It was the first time I said to myself, "This is a turning point here now." I was able to kind of win my own ball, you know.
Well, I did tell you at the top of this segment that this conversation was only scratching the surface of the Larry Tompkins story. That's part one, and we haven't even got to the beginning of his playing career with Cork from 1987. Larry would play in the next four All-Ireland finals with Cork, losing the first two before redemption and revenge were his lot in 89 and 90. We'll be back with part two shortly.